OpenAI said overnight that GPT 5.6, Sol, Terra, and Luna will launch publicly on Thursday, July 9th, and that preview access is expanding globally now. Axios and CNBC both framed the same event through US clearance. The Commerce Department has lifted the limits that had kept the rollout narrower than OpenAI wanted. The models are named, the launch date is tomorrow, and the access gate that was the story 2 weeks ago is now open enough for a public release.
The date matters because the previous version of this story wasn't about benchmark tables. It was about who got to touch a frontier model while the government was still deciding whether broader access created a national security problem. So the new fact isn't that Sol exists. OpenAI already said that. The new fact is that the access decision changed before the public launch.
Right. I would keep this at the level the sources support. We don't know from the reporting that Sol, Terra, or Luna changed capability since the first preview announcement. We have Ethan Mollick saying he had early access and demos, and we have the OpenAI post naming the Thursday launch. That is enough for a lead story because access is part of the product now, but it isn't enough to write a mythology of the model before people can use it.
A model launch now has at least two artifacts attached to it, the model card or launch note, and the permission story around the launch note. Who got the preview? Who was held back? Which agency had a say? Which markets count as safe enough for day one? That second artifact changes how people read the first one.
And it changes the tone of tomorrow. If the public build is good, the regulatory pause becomes a short prologue. If the public build is uneven, every early access quote is going to get reread as a filtered preview. I think OpenAI would rather have the conversation move back to the model itself as fast as possible. A broad Thursday release does that in a way a trusted partner preview never could.
It also gives builders a more direct object to argue about. A constrained preview invites proxy arguments. Who got access? Who was excluded? Whether open models benefited from the delay? A public release puts pressure back on the artifact. People can test the coding behavior and the reasoning modes. They can feel the latency, the price, and all the little ways a model annoys you after the first hour.
So today starts with the public gate opening on GPT 5.6. The security section gets very concrete. A GitHub agent leak report, an MCP paper about invisible approval payloads, and an authorization paper that says the agent shouldn't be the place where authority lives. After that, the chip capital story runs through Apple and Broadcom, then Samba Nova, SK Hynix, and China. Then we will do a shorter builder note from the AI engineer talks, and a brief update on US scrutiny of Chinese model adoption.
The calendar detail is useful too. This is Wednesday's show, and the public launch is Thursday, July 9th. That means the story is still in the awkward in-between state where OpenAI has made the access announcement, reporters have the clearance angle, and users don't yet have enough ordinary usage to know whether the names map to meaningful differences. Sol, Terra, and Luna sound like a product family. Tomorrow is when that family has to become something people can compare.
And the comparison will be messy in the normal way. Early testers often find the best path through a model because they are motivated and fluent. Public users find the edges, the prompt that should work and doesn't, the coding task that regresses, the cheap trick that suddenly improves, the latency that feels fine in a demo and annoying in a daily tool. The early access comments should stay in their lane. They are useful hints. They aren't a replacement for the public artifact. Noma Security published a post called Git Lost, saying they tricked GitHub's AI agent into leaking private repositories. The reporting doesn't give us the whole exploit chain, so I am not going to embellish it. But as a source title, it is already specific in the way these stories need to be specific. Private repos, an agent with GitHub authority, and a route from instruction to exposure.
Private repositories make the risk concrete, because private repositories are exactly the kind of thing coding agents are meant to read. You give the agent repository context, because otherwise it can't help. Then the security problem isn't whether the agent can access sensitive code. It often can, by design. The problem is who or what gets to influence what it does with that access.
The Arxiv paper on MCP concealment takes that down to the byte level. Its abstract says MCP servers advertise tools through a tools list handshake. name, natural language description, and JSON input schema. The client renders that metadata once in an approval dialog and then injects the same metadata into the model's context on later turns. The author's claim is simple and nasty. The rendered approval view and the bytes delivered to the model don't have to match.
Kutioniski. And the Unicode tag block is the perfect little villain for that. Their paper says those code points have no assigned glyph in mainstream terminals, chat clients, or IDE renderers. So the human sees nothing, while the tokenizer still receives the payload. That isn't a jailbreak phrase wearing a fake mustache. It is a mismatch between what a person can inspect and what the model gets to read.
They tested 8 techniques across 5 MCP metadata surfaces, descriptions and input schemas, plus tool names, error text, and post-approval mutation. All 8 delivered attacker-controlled payloads into the model context. 4 evaded a representative string-matching sanitizer. Only the tag block encoding was invisible in the human approval view while still reaching the model verbatim. And under their rug pull test, MCP forced reapproval for 0 of the 8 techniques.
The 0 is the number that changes the approval story. If the server can show you one tool definition at approval time and a different definition later, the approval ceremony becomes stale the moment the server changes its mind. The user didn't approve the bytes the model is reading. They approved a visible approximation that may no longer be current.
A second Archive paper argues for moving authorization off the agent's host. The author evaluates 15 contemporary language models against 8 attack scenarios and reports refusal rates from 100% down to 38%. The most expensive model refused only half the attacks. Then the proposed gateway verifies every user message with an HMAC SHA-256 signature, a single-use nonce, and a timestamp window before any tool call executes.
The distinction helps because the paper isn't trying to make the model more virtuous. It is saying the model can be deceived and still be prevented from acting outside the verified user's authority. The gateway evaluates role-based policy, argument-level constraints, and rate limits in a separate trust domain, and the agent can't read or modify that policy. That is a different bet from asking the model to remember who is allowed to do what.
The numbers are almost too crisp, so I want to say exactly what they are. With the gateway in place, the paper reports residual attack success falling to 0% for all 15 models, with no more than 0.03 milliseconds of added decision latency. On the Agent Dojo banking suite, it blocked all 7 attacker-directed tool calls the evaluated agents emitted, while costing 1 legitimate first-time payment. The QR receipt part is stranger. Accepted messages get HMAC authenticated QR receipts, and the paper reports 94% mean verification across 8 transmission channels, with 0 forgeries accepted in 25 wrong key trials.
The QR receipt is oddly human. You can picture why it exists. Someone forwards a screenshot into a ticket, compresses it in chat, crops it badly, and later a compliance person still needs to verify that a person authorized the action. The paper is technical, but the social scene behind it is familiar. People will litigate agent actions after the fact, with messy artifacts in messy places.
The paper also has a deployment caveat. If the agent runtime keeps its own shell, file, or web tools enabled next to the gateway, the model can route around the gateway and take the sensitive action through the built-in path. So the proposed design includes a conformance check, an egress locked profile, and a credential broker. The author is basically saying the authorization boundary only works if the agent has to cross it.
That caveat matters because it refuses the fantasy version of security where adding one clever component purifies the rest of the system. The gateway can make an authorization decision, but it can't govern a parallel toolpath that never asks. In agent systems, the bypass is often the old convenience feature you forgot was still turned on.
CNBC and TechMeme also picked up China's warning that some Claude code versions contained backdoor vulnerabilities. That needs precise attribution. It is a claim from Chinese authorities, not something the reporting independently proves. The claim now sits next to the GitLost report and the 2 papers in an uncomfortable way. Agent security is moving from speculative diagrams into repository access, tool metadata, authorization receipts, and state-level warnings.
And the remedies are getting less poetic. The approval view has to match the bites. Tool definitions need reapproval when they change. Policy needs to live off-host. Built-in tools can't give the agent a route around the gateway. Those are mechanical demands, and they are less fun than a new model demo, but they are where the authority of the system is decided.
Tim Cook posted today about Apple and Broadcom expanding U.S. chip manufacturing, and CNBC puts the commitment at more than $30 billion. We have spent a lot of time lately on power and interconnection, so that chapter does not need a replay. Today's hardware story is more about signed capital and manufacturing commitments. Who is promising money, where the manufacturing sits, and which parts of the AI supply chain keep attracting checks.
Apple is a good entry point because it doesn't look like a Model Lab arms race from the outside. It looks like a supply chain company buying more control over a part it can't afford to have floating around in somebody else's queue. Broadcom is already woven through custom silicon stories. Apple making the commitment public tells you the domestic manufacturing story is part of the product narrative now.
Then TechMeme's hardware capital cluster adds Samba Nova, raising $1 billion at an $11 billion valuation, with JP Morgan named in the reporting as an enterprise customer. That is a different kind of signal from Apple's commitment. It is venture money and enterprise confidence in specialized AI hardware. While everyone is still arguing about how much inference demand will be served by general-purpose GPUs, custom accelerators, and model-specific stacks.
Samba Nova is interesting because the buyer story matters as much as the chip story. A bank customer doesn't buy a hardware thesis in the abstract. It buys latency, capacity, control, procurement comfort, and a path that doesn't strand the whole AI program on one supplier. JP Morgan showing up in that sentence makes the funding round less like a market mood and more like an enterprise infrastructure bet.
The SK Hynix item comes from TechMeme's read of an IPO prospectus through high bandwidth memory and China exposure. The number in the reporting is a $28 billion raise. I am deliberately not turning that into a grand chip thesis because the reporting only gives us the outline, but memory still makes model ambition physical. Training and inference plans eventually ask for packages, wafers, capacity reservations, export permissions, and customers who can wait long enough for the supply chain to answer.
The China policy signal belongs here too. Watcher Guru is a weaker source here, so it shouldn't carry the segment. But the reported priority on AI and chips fits the broader pattern. The countries and companies with money aren't only buying chips. They are buying optionality, the ability to keep building if access narrows, if export rules change, or if the next model family needs a different memory profile.
The important restraint here is that none of these items alone says the hardware race has a new winner. Apple and Broadcom have a manufacturing commitment. Samba Nova has a very large funding round and a named enterprise customer. SK Hynix has memory exposure being scrutinized through an IPO lens. China has another policy signal. Those separate commitments make the AI supply chain feel less like a background condition and more like a series of public commitments that companies now want investors, customers, and governments to see.
These capital items also keep surfacing because model releases are visible in a way supply commitments aren't. You can try a chat model and feel the difference in a minute. You can't feel a wafer agreement, a memory allocation, or an enterprise accelerator deployment the same way. But those commitments decide which demos can become default products and which ones remain scarce, expensive, or region limited.
That is why the Apple Broadcom item fits beside the OpenAI launch without needing to be the same story. The launch says broader access is arriving tomorrow. The chip news says broader access has to be manufactured long before anyone writes the launch post. One is a calendar event, the other is a balance sheet event. AI companies increasingly need both to be credible. The AI engineer videos selected for today aren't one breaking news item, but they are a useful builder sidebar. The selected talks cover fleets of agents across multiple machines, an agency language or framework for harness design, verification loops for coding agents, and spreadsheet agents moving from sequential tool calls to persistent repl-style state. The harness discussion is getting less abstract.
A multi-machine agent fleet changes the unit of debugging. When an agent lives on one laptop, you can pretend the transcript is the system. Once several machines are sharing work, the system includes state sync, leases, retries, logs, and the moment when two agents think they own the next step. That isn't glamorous, but it is where agent behavior becomes legible enough to improve.
The spreadsheet example is the small clue I like. A sequential tool calling spreadsheet agent can read a cell, decide on a formula, write the result, and repeat. A persistent RePL-style agent can keep state in the domain while it works. That starts to feel less like chat with a calculator attached and more like an assistant living inside the structure of the artifact.
And verification loops matter, because coding agents have a habit of sounding finished before the program is finished. The reporting describes a talk about reliability and verification, and that is the piece of harness work that still feels underdescribed. The harness isn't there to make the demo more ornate. It is there to create a place where the agent has to meet the artifact again after acting on it.
That connects back to the security segment without needing a forced theory. The same agent that needs verification for quality also needs authority boundaries for safety. But those are separate jobs. A test harness tells you whether the code behaves. An authorization gateway tells you whether this caller was allowed to trigger that behavior in the first place. Collapsing those into one idea is how people end up asking the model to be judge, developer, and security officer at once. CNBC reports that US lawmakers are probing the growing use of Chinese AI models inside American companies. This is close to yesterday's Braid episode, which went deep on Chinese model access and US reliance on Chinese APIs, so today's update should stay narrow. The new element is congressional attention on enterprise adoption, not a fresh explanation of the whole US-China model access problem.
The enterprise angle is the uncomfortable one, because adoption doesn't always announce itself as adoption. A team uses a cheaper API for translation. A support workflow picks a model with better latency in a region. A vendor bundles a Chinese model behind a feature. And suddenly, a company has exposure that didn't go through the same review path as a strategic platform decision.
Tech memes supporting items make clear why the policy concern keeps returning. Minimax is reported to have a 2.7 trillion parameter model with open source plans, and Zipu or Z.AI has fresh capital news. Again, those aren't the same story as the house probe. One is model capability and distribution. One is company financing. One is US oversight. But the combination makes it harder for enterprise buyers to treat Chinese model adoption as an edge case.
And it makes the procurement question more interesting than the rhetoric. A cheap, capable, open model that is already inside products people buy means policy concern has to travel through contracts and logs, plus data flow mapping and vendor disclosure. You can't solve that with a slogan about foreign models. You need to know which model answered which user under which terms.
So the day ends with a public launch date and a much messier set of surrounding systems. OpenAI gets its Thursday release. Researchers are asking whether users can see the exact bytes a model will read, and whether tool authority can be moved out of the agent's reach. Chip companies and customers are putting real money behind capacity. Lawmakers are asking which foreign models already sit inside American workflows.
That is a good place to leave the model access story for one more day. Tomorrow's public GPT 5.6 release will tell us whether the clearance story changed access only, or whether broader access also changes the way people judge Sol, Terra, and Luna once the demos become ordinary usage. Lenar Kess.